So our presentation today is Brighter Skies and Better Days by Rob Brink. Rob was a Christian minister for 15 years, and he started out as a fundamentalist. He moved further and further left over time until he fell off the edge. Now a happy humanist, he offers encouragement and advice to anyone looking to be more humane, a more humane human. Please welcome Rob.
Thank you very much for the warm welcome. It's a pleasure to be back here. I've met some of you before. Our reading today is called Hope is Not a Bird, Emily. It's a Sewer Rat. It's a poem by Caitlin Seida, S-E-I-D-A. Hope is not a thing with feathers that comes home to roost when you need it most. Hope is an ugly thing with teeth and claws and patchy fur that's seen some shit. It's what thrives in the discards and survives in the ugliest parts of our world, able to find a way to go on when nothing else can even find a way in. It's the gritty, nasty little carrier of such diseases as optimism, persistence, perseverance, and joy, transmissible as it drags its tail across your path and bites you in the ass. Hope is not some delicate, beautiful bird, Emily. It's a lowly little sewer rat that snorts pesticides like there were lines of coke and still shows up on time to work the next day, looking no worse for wear. In our promo for this talk, I invited folks to bring an item to share. Appropriately, I left mine at home. Mine were a pair of goggles for the eclipse. Drove down, to, show of hands, who else saw the eclipse? Well done. Drove down, met my mom and my brother down there. And it was, by any reasonable metric, the worst camping trip ever. We got there, and my brother sent us a note saying, it's going to frost tonight, no offense, but I'm not coming. So my mom and I set up our tent alone, and then it did frost that night. We slept in the car, waking up every hour to turn it on so we didn't freeze. And then the next day, it was so windy that it broke both of our tents. And then the next day, it rained all day. And then the next day, we had the most glorious experience ever, with a perfect day and clear skies and little kids running around and this unifying experience of standing in awe under the sun. No words, absolutely no words. Does anyone else have a sign of hope to share? I think you've seen here that hope is a bit like love. It's a word that we use to mean so many different things. Like, I hope it doesn't keep raining. I hope the Packers win the playoffs. I hope that Illinois figures out how much money there might be in giving people tickets when they camp out in the passing lane. When I say hope today, I mean something very specific. I mean Star Wars hope. Looking out past impossible odds and noticing past a bleak reality, a flickering candle of opportunity. Hope is dedicating yourself to a future you may never see and being utterly okay with that. Reaching your end with a smile because even though you didn't get there is still out there. I could use some hope today. Because everywhere I look, I see fear and anger, both justified and manufactured. We're a divided nation living on borrowed time, caught in cultural systems so dysfunctional and entrenched that a large number of our children don't want to have children anymore, because why bring a kid into this? We could use a little hope. When COVID hit and we were all stuck in our homes, my little flicker of hope was John Krasinski's Some Good News. And I wasn't the only one. Those 8 episodes drew over 72 million views and 2.58 million subscribers in 8 weeks. We're hungry for hope. When Katrina hit and all the news wanted to talk about was terror in the Superdome, and when federal help was nowhere to be seen, and cops were setting up barriers to keep people in, hope was Cajuns in flatboats. Hope was street hustlers stealing school buses and getting people out of town. When 9/11 hit, hope was boots climbing up while shoes ran down. It was let's roll. It was exhausted rescue workers and their four-legged friends going back for one more on cut feet. Again and again, when tragedy strikes, communities gather, humans rally. We did not survive this long by going it alone and being rugged individualists. Which is about where I would have ended the talk if I'd given it a couple decades ago. Everybody pull together, try hard, we'll get there someday. But I'm older now, and I've learned that happiness, the happiness of the ending, depends largely on where you put the period. When COVID hit, we really did pull together, and it really was beautiful until it turned ugly and we fell apart. It's been almost 20 years since Katrina. It's only been 10 since the city manager who put up barricades to trap people in Katrina. He retired at 20 years. To applause, a standing ovation. Good job, boss. We really did rally behind the first responders of 9/11 until they started getting cancer from inhaling all that dust and asbestos and folded concrete. And then suddenly it was a budget issue. When I say hope, I'm not talking about blind optimism. I'm talking about refusing to sink into selfishness and cynicism and despair. My wife's name is Val. That's new, I think, since the last time I was here. Her son's best friend lost his life recently, like within a month. We still don't know all the story. He was in a rough neighborhood, and there was a guy in his car. And we heard from the kid who survived that Jaden saw the gun and pushed him down, covered him with his own body, and didn't make it. This kid ate at our table and slept under our roof, and now he's gone. So when I say hope is critical, I'm not being Pollyanna. I'm being as practical as I can be. Look how far we've come as a species. There's, with the possible exception of Antarctica, there is not a continent on this planet that is not wet with the blood of human sacrifice. And if you go to city after city, especially in Europe, but not only in Europe, you will find the city planted on the ashes of witches. And it turns out that witches' spells were just as real as the ancient gods. Did I say witches? I'm sorry, I meant uppity women. For most of human history, slavery wasn't a sin. You open the Bible, they give you instructions on how to do it properly. Turns out subhumans are just as real as the ancient gods and the witch he curses, though. So I guess we figure that out. I grew up with friends who were terrified to come out of the closet, and I was there the day they got married. We have come a long way, even in just this lifetime, because it turns out that they really were just people all along, and all the hysteria was just people being scared. This is how far we've come. According to the Associated Press, 200 million people went to watch that eclipse. Within the path of totality, internet traffic dropped by 50% in a traveling band across the United States. I was there, and for four beautiful minutes, we weren't Republicans or Democrats or old or young. We were all just humans. While little kids ran around screaming, "This is amazing!" It was awesome. You want to know how far we've come? Christopher Columbus also saw an eclipse. Not a solar one. His was lunar, you know, the kind that turns the moon blood red. So the way it worked is it was 1504. He's stranded in Bermuda after a mutiny on account of he was such a great leader. And they were starving. The locals knew it. So the locals made like an Illinois gas station and they raised their prices. And Christopher was a God-fearing capitalist, so he paid fair market value for those goods and he thanked them and went home, right? Yeah, I don't think so. Now, he told the natives that Jesus was angry and that they should come watch him turn the moon to blood. And when they did, and they saw, they got scared. And they started bringing him everything they had. Doesn't matter if it's enough to feed our family for the next 6 months. Just turn the moon back, please. And he said, "Well, let me go pray about it." Pray about it. And he went into his boat and checked the book to find out when the eclipse was about to be over. And then he came out and he said, "Good news, I prayed for you. And God has had mercy so far. Keep that food coming." How do we know this story? Because his son wrote it in the biography, which they then published. Because he knew for a fact that no one who read it would have any problem with that story. And he was right, because they commissioned paintings of it. You can still see them. That's how far we come. That used to be normal. That used to be applauded. He didn't call it genocide or fraud. He called it shrewd. And he got paintings made about it. That's how far we've come. And every inch of that path that we have cut from that to where we are today was carved by people with hope, and it was opposed by people without it. You think progress only marches one way? Google fashion, Iran, 1977. Try saying that progress only moves one way. Some people have no hope. They are trapped in a zero-sum game of tooth and claw. And as far as they can see, all of your high-minded ideals about peace and the fellowship of humanity, well, at best it's naive. At worst, it's a con. So they're already making plans. They think about inequality and violence the way we think about Mondays. Like, yeah, it sucks, but what are you going to do? So if they're making plans and all you've got is hope, then you got a problem. which is why I appreciated the 100 different ways that hope came out at this microphone today. Hope is my child. Hope is my plants. Hope is 3 different organizations that are making positive governmental change. Ever notice that autocrats and their alt-right followers all seem to have a problem with poets and singers and artists and comedians? It's consistent. Across cultures, autocrats always have a problem with that. Because if your worldview is built on hopelessness, then dreamers are a threat. If your power base is built on fear, the unafraid must be silenced or corrupted. Hope isn't just motivation or a goal, it's a tool that we use. When people learn who I used to be, super religious, fundamentalist, misogynist, homophobe, and they see who I've become, the question everybody asks is, what? Like, how? How did you, because I've got people, and man, they need it. How did you? Well, it wasn't one thing. It was 1,000 things over literal decades of time, clawing against every effort of my own. It wasn't that I changed my mind. My mind was changed. And it wasn't, there were turning points. One of them was comedy. I was a preacher. And I really wanted to be a better preacher. So I went down, there was a bar that had a comedy show every week, every single week on Wednesday night. You could go down for $5, listen to a comedian tell stories. And I literally take notes. One day, Chili Chalice, if you're familiar with the market around here, you would remember Chili. He's gone now, but he was a legend. Chili says, are you seriously stealing my jokes? I'm like, no, man, I just want to not suck. I'm not stealing your jokes, I promise. I just need practice. So I'm writing these things down and I'm learning. And over the course of 5 years, what I discovered is that the thing that I believed could not be true. Because what I had been told is that if you're an atheist, you can't have morals. Because morals must be founded on something solid, like the rock of Jesus Christ in the Bible. So if you don't believe in the Bible, then you just mean, like, hey, let's just kill everybody. And yet here were these trenchant, witty observers of reality throwing barbs out that were funny specifically because they were true. Like, that doesn't make sense. And I was told from this big that if you didn't have Jesus in your heart, then you were just going to be miserable. Like, life was going to be bad for you. And here were these brilliant people, week after week after week. They didn't plan ahead. They didn't know each other. They were just living their life, and they were hilarious, and they were so happy in like a mildly dysfunctional kind of way. Their honesty and vulnerability was an argument that I couldn't ignore. Against my will, my mind was changed. Our strategy is not preemptive violence. That just confirms their presuppositions. Our strategy is not cutting words, as fun as that may be, because all it does is drive them further into their own fear. Our strategy is intentional, unashamed, defiant hope lived right in their smug little know-it-all faces. Because there will be a day when I'm too tired to organize a social justice movement, but there will never be a day when I'm too tired to be myself. Hope means seeing the world as it is, and then it is as it could be, and then refusing to settle. So don't make a threat. Just live your life with such authenticity that uptight people are afraid of you automatically. You don't have to say anything. Don't make an argument. Be an argument. be hope that cannot be denied. Thank you.